ones that they were causing trouble, they asked Jesus a specific question. They asked if they could sit one at his right and one at his left. And Jesus replies to them. And Jesus' reply is recorded in Mark 10 for us. And we're going to pick the story up at the end of Jesus' response to them. And in Mark 10, verses 44 through 45, Jesus tells this to the disciples. "Whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So you might be thinking, I'll be talking about verse 44, right? Talking about pride or something along those lines, that the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Actually, I'm going to be focusing on verse 45. And this afternoon, we'll be discussing Christ. In verse 45, Jesus talks about himself in the third person. He is the Son of Man. The Son of Man came to serve. The Son of Man came to be a ransom. The Son of Man was reduced and diminished to a servant. He was reduced and diminished to a ransom. A ransom for all. And when we think about this and what he's been reduced to, there's a lot of comparisons of this throughout Scripture. And that's what we're discussing. What Jesus, our King of Kings, or our Lord of Lords, what he has been reduced to, what he's been diminished to for us and for our sake. And that phrase that I just brought up, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, that comes out of Revelation, specifically the 19th chapter. And we're not going to turn there, but in that chapter, and all throughout Revelation, it compares Jesus to a lamb. And that's where we're going to begin, of how Jesus has been compared and reduced to. And Peter, when he's writing, he discusses this comparison even more. In 1 Peter, the first chapter, 18 through 19, Peter writes this: "Knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things, like silver or gold, from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot." A lamb without blemish. Lamb without spot. Of course, we know this is going back to the old law, where there are sacrifices, offerings made, or at least they were supposed to be made. And without spot, without blemish, they had to be perfect physically. They had to be healthy. They had to be able-bodied. They had to be good animals. There could be nothing wrong with them. And if we look closer into a lamb, typically a lamb was about a year old. And that was the description given in the old law. And because of their age, because of their youthfulness in a sense, they were generally more gentle, more innocent, and more docile. And it was this animal that would be sacrificed. It would have a very short life on earth, and it would take on the sin when people would sacrifice it. And this is the animal, this cute, cuddly creature that Christ is compared to. And this is what Jesus has been reduced to. Jesus was like a lamb. He was without spot. He was without blemish. He was perfect. And of course, lambs were docile. They were gentler. And Jesus himself says he is gentle in heart when he's discussing to take upon my yoke, for I am gentle in heart. And just like these lambs that were just a year old, Jesus had a short life on earth. And a short life on earth because of us and for us. Of course, we can go into a lot of depth about the symbolic meaning of Jesus and a lamb. I could be discussing that the whole time because it's so deep and it's so profound. But what I want us to get out of this, especially talking about this lamb, is that Jesus is being compared to and reduced to a lamb. An animal that we often see as a cute, cuddly, woolly creature is God's Son. And God's Son's death is being compared to this lamb's death. Jesus went from being in heaven to being our Lamb. And when we look back into the old law, it was the lamb had to be slaughtered. That was typically by the priest and by the high priest. And of course, in our classes in Hebrews, we've been talking about that high priesthood and how that's changed with Christ. And that's where we're going to pick up again, because there's even more comparison of what Jesus has done for us. In Hebrews, the 9th chapter, the writer says this to the believers. Verses 11 and 14 say this. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands. That is, not of this creation. Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered into the most holy place once and for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling the unclean, sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? These few verses have a lot of meaning and a lot of power for us. And I'm not going to go into all too much depth because of it, because we will get there in our class, and there's going to be even more good things that we'll have to say about it. But what I want to bring up is what Jesus is being compared to, what his death is being compared to. In this few verses, Jesus is compared to three bovines and a goat. He's compared to bulls, heifers, calves, and goats. His death is reduced to those four animals. Of course, with these four animals, you can get a lot of symbolic meaning out of them. Bulls, for instance, they typically were strong. They were seen as the best of the best. They were your most prized livestock. And Jesus was always the most prized. And he should be our most prized. A heifer, according to Google, told me it was a female cow that has yet to give birth. And it's interesting about that, because that would imply that generically it's probably a little younger and hasn't made it yet. And so when I was thinking about that, it reminded me that Jesus never became adulterated with the world. He never had these relations that would change him. Of course, a calf is a baby cow. They're young, they're innocent. And Jesus was innocent. He was pure, without spot, without blemish. He did no sin. And the goat kind of stands out. It's not a bovine. It's closer to a sheep. If we go back to the old law, the goat was the scapegoat. People would pronounce their sins on it and let it run in the wilderness. And Jesus, like these goats in the old law, became our scapegoat. Jesus is being compared and reduced to these four animals for us. Of course, we know that the symbolic meaning of this is very important, because in Hebrews 10 it says all these things about the old law was a shadow of the things to come. Shadow of the things coming, pointing to Christ, of the greater things that were about to happen. And of course, we can always look at animals and different stories of how Jesus has been compared to these critters. But I want to look at a different way that Jesus has been reduced to us. When you look into the crucifixion story, there's a lot of things that seem to take away Christ's humanity. And one of the stories that resonates with me a lot, especially how his humanity was taken, was about the story of Jesus taking the place of Barabbas. That story is mentioned in all four Gospels, which is significant. But the Gospel account that I want to look at is in Luke. It is found in Luke 23. So, of course, Jesus has been arrested, and he's in Pilate's court. He's already talked to the chief priest, and now he's waiting sentence, waiting his charge. And I'm going to pick up the story in verse 13 and read up until 25. Then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those sins of which you accuse him. No, neither did Herod. For I sent you back to him, and indeed, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For it is necessary for him to release one of them at the feast." And they all cried out at once, saying, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas." Barabbas had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city, and for murder. Pilate, therefore wishing to release Jesus, once again called out to them. But they shouted, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Then he said to them the third time, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priest prevailed. So Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. And he released to them the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been put in a prison. But he delivered Jesus to their will. Jesus was reduced to something lower than Barabbas. His life was of less value, was less worthy than a man who started a rebellion, than a man who committed murder. And if we look at Barabbas, we know he's well known, because everyone's shouting for him to be released. The rebellion probably made waves across Jerusalem, maybe even throughout Israel. And this is the man that they started shouting to be released. If we try to speculate over Barabbas, his rebellion could have easily been against Rome. Because typically that's who they rebelled against, was it Rome. If we continue thinking on this track, Pilate is the governor of Judea because Rome put him there. And if Barabbas' rebellion was truly against Rome, then Pilate is doing something even against the Roman Empire's best interest in releasing him and putting Christ in his place. He's going against what would be in the best interest for his career, for the people who even gave him a job, for a man who's done nothing wrong. And he even knows it. Of course, when Pilate did this, the sentence became clear. It was going to be death. It's going to be crucifixion. It wasn't anything like Barabbas, in fact, because Barabbas went to prison. And then he was waiting trial, waiting his sentence, waiting his death penalty. Not Jesus. He went straight to death, even though he had done nothing wrong. Jesus was reduced to less than a rebel and less than a murderer for us. Now, if we take even further look at Barabbas, there's a lot of spiritual meaning that we can get out of it. Barabbas got off free because of Jesus. Jesus physically took Barabbas' place, and in a sense, he wiped away his offenses and his charges. He became a freed man and was released from prison. Of course, this is a physical matter of Jesus taking Barabbas' place, prison, and of the death penalty. But we can get a lot of spiritual meaning out of that too. And I want to begin to discuss how that spiritual element applies to us nowadays. In 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, there's a very famous verse that some of you may know by heart, and it's verse 21. And in this verse, Paul writes this to the church in Corinth. For he, God, made Jesus, who knew no sin, to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Jesus is being reduced to sin for us. He took that place for us. And in doing so, he did it so that we could become the righteousness of God, that we may live a right life, that we may live in accordance with God and his will. Now, I want to look back at Barabbas and how this applies to him. Of course, in a physical sense, Jesus became the sin, became the charges and the offense of Barabbas. Of course, spiritually, that wasn't the case. But after Barabbas was free, what do you think happened to him? Do you think he went back to his old ways? Do you think he started planning another rebellion? Started getting back with his other rebels? Maybe he even had a hit list again that he didn't finish. He had some more people he had to kill. Well, of course he was an evil man, but maybe he himself got murdered. Lots of people didn't like him, I would presume. If the rebellion was against the Roman Empire, Rome might have killed him. And then he would have just been out. Or maybe, just maybe, Barabbas saw everything that happened with Jesus. He started to think. He had a change of heart. Maybe he gave up his evil ways. Maybe he even met some disciples. Possibly even turning to God and changing his life for the better. But of course, this is all conjecture. We don't know truly what Barabbas did. His story starts and ends with Jesus taking his place. But we do know is what we need to do when Jesus takes our place for sin and becomes sin for us. We're supposed to become the righteousness of God. The way we live our life needs to be in accordance with his will. We always need to know that Christ, God's own Son, became sin for us. And there's a similar verse as this in 2 Corinthians that illustrates this even more. In 1 Peter, the second chapter, verse 24, Paul says that, Peter says this to the believers. Who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness. By whose stripes you were healed. It's because of Jesus that we live for righteousness. Jesus became sin for us. Jesus was beaten. Jesus hung on the cross. And he bore all of our sin. His suffering, his death, everything that he endured allows us to live. But not just that. We live for righteousness. We live according to God's will, according to his plan, and we do what is right. We do what is just. And we do this for a number of reasons, but one is because we remember what Christ has been reduced to. We don't let that go away in vain. It has true meaning, and it has true impact on our lives. And what he did is seen through our righteous lifestyles. And we live righteously. And of course, we live righteously because Jesus bore it all. He bore all of our sin in his own body. He was reduced from King of Kings, from Lord of Lords, to bearing the weight of our sin. I don't think any of us could ever imagine anything like that. But he did it for us. For each and every single one of us. So I have a question for you all to think about. How many of you have been reduced to an animal? Not just that. What about reduced to an animal's death? Have you heard of anybody whose death is compared to an animal? I don't know many. Or at all. Do you know anyone who's been reduced to a murderer? to a rebel? Do you know anyone who's actually worse than a murderer? Whose life is deemed not even worthy as someone who's incredibly notorious as Barabbas? Do you know somebody who has become sin for you? Who tried to bear it all your hardships and all your trials? All these things are what Christ has been reduced to for us. He became despised so that we could become children of the living God. He loved us so great that he endured it all. So as I conclude this afternoon, I just want to encourage you all to act. If there's anything that you haven't done for Christ, maybe you just haven't taken the first step. You need to. Jesus has been reduced for us all, and he wants you to come to him. He bears all of our sin, but you need to come. Or maybe you've already come to Christ. You are his son. You are his daughter. But you have forgotten what Christ has done. You have forgotten what Christ has been reduced to. You start slipping away from that righteousness that Peter describes, that Paul describes. The way you're living your life isn't emblematic of what Christ has done. If there's anything else that you need to do, anything else that you need to think about, pray about, anything at all, I ask that you do this now as we stand and as we sing the closing number.
Number 176, number 176. We will sing it as it is written, first two slowly, third faster.